I don't wanna go to work. I just wanna chill and play all day. Look them dead in the face and say, I wish I could just be still asleep while you work.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Jobs Blow podcast with Brianna and Josh.
The podcast for dreamers with and without day jobs.
We're so glad to be here again, still rocking and rolling, sharing more inspiring stories as well as perspectives on surviving life and career in, during, around, and almost out of a pandemic.
And this is the perfect show today because we will be talking about post-pandemic job searches.
And job trends, right? So that's cool. Hopefully we could all kind of recharge our batteries and kind of gain some perspective if we're still out there searching for jobs, as we always seem to be, right, Brianna?
Job searchers.
How are you today? How are you doing this week?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you? School's over.
School's out for summer. I know. Yeah. So exciting. And I've been showed that song to the kids in the car the other day.
It's Alice Cooper, isn't it?
Alice Cooper's, right? Oh my God. It's so funny. They were singing it. I want to give a shout out to my buddy, Matt Pliskin down in Florida, old friend from high school. Love you, bro. Thanks for listening to all our episodes. Keep checking it out. And my big news for this week is basically, on top of school being out, I started that. Have you seen those ads on Instagram, the Noom ads for like,
oh yeah, the diet, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like a new approach to losing weight, but like from a psychology standpoint, dude, I got that Ben Franklin video back, and as good as it came out, I am fat. I'm fat, Josh. So I just signed up for it, and so far so good. It's cool because it gives you like a psychological perspective on eating and dieting, as opposed to like, just eat this, don't eat that, you know? So far so good. I'm down a pound, 1.6 pounds. I'm fucking crushing it. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah,
that's good. I'm good. I'm good. Getting ready to go to Ohio in a little over a week.
So, right. See, we'll the family.
There. We'll be there for two glorious weeks. So
at what point during that trip do you call me and go, I need to come home?
Well, I hope not, but you know, now that I have work, well, I'm going on vacation for the first time in 2 years, I'll be working from Ohio.
So. Well, that's cool. But also really cool that you're seeing everybody down there, your family.
Yeah. My dad actually called me today and he was like, and he doesn't call me very often. He was like, when are you coming? That made me feel good. So
that's great. Yeah. And Ella too will love that. So,
yeah.
Cool. All right. So we have a cool quote for today because, again, a little bit of our theme too is also women in the workforce. And our guest is going to talk a little bit about some of the stats that have been presented of late of post-pandemic and women returning to the workforce. But our quote is, it is hard to be a woman. You must think like a man, act like a lady, look like a young girl, and work like a horse. Now, it is unknown who said that, but it is also credited to Hillary Clinton for having promoted that by having a picture of that on her wall in her house, and she's talked about it. So what do you think about that quote? I think it's kind of badass.
I think it pretty much hits the nail on the head.
There it is.
But let's ask our guest, Amanda. What do you think of that quote?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty accurate. mean, if you want to get ahead, you know, I think for a long time, especially with women, it's you have the work face and then you have the mom face or the family face. And God forbid those two ever, you know, intersected or you let one show. But kind of the one silver lining I'd say that came out of COVID for a lot of people is like, bam, not going to lie, guys, there's a good chance my 5-year-old's going to be naked and run through here at some point. And we're going to all have to deal with it.
Right. You have to be still a mom, right?
He just didn't expect people like Jeffrey Toobin to jerk off during his Zoom calls, right? naked children's one thing, but respected journalists.
Yeah. Totally not. You know. Let's get the show title in here. So this is we're called Show 69. Okay, and we're calling it Looking for Jobs Blows with certified career coach at topresume.com, Amanda Augustine. thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you. And we cannot wait for you to tell us how to get a fucking job. Just kidding. All right. How are you, though? How are you?
I'm good. I think, you know, my response through most of the last year was I'm hanging in there. And that's just kind of, I'm not telling you I'm fantastic and I'm not telling you that everything's awful, but I'm hanging in there. And it feels like there's a little light at the end of the tunnel. So hopefully we're getting there.
Well, I mean, can you just tell me what your job is exactly? What do you do? You have a lot of hats.
I have a lot of hats. So I am a certified professional career coach and resume writer by trade. And so before I joined this company, I had my own little shop where I was coaching individuals of kind of all levels through career changes and job searches and that sort of thing. Resume writing was my original background. And then I moved kind of into, okay, well, how do you break down the job search into something that actually makes sense and is manageable and digestible, because it's a freaking roller coaster. There's so many rules that you don't know, because why would you know them? You don't get great at something unless you're doing it all the time. Most people are not searching.
Wait. Josh and I are searching.
Okay, well, time,
and true. I don't think we're great at it. Josh, do you feel like you're great at it?
At the job search, I basically am like coming up with like random shit now as like ways to do it. Like driving by, throwing up a crumpled piece of paper at somebody on the street and be like, hire me. And then driving off. So like, I have no fucking perspective.
We've got no game.
We'll work on that. So that's my background. And specifically at Top Resume, a lot of what I do is running research for them to provide insights either on what are job seekers saying, and let's make sure we understand what they need and what they don't understand. And then what are recruiters saying? What are employers saying? How can we take that information and apply it to our resume writing services? How we write a LinkedIn profile? How we prep someone for an interview? And, you know, just what do those things look like? Because obviously as their needs or demands change, we want to make sure whatever we're providing job seekers is also changing to meet those needs. So
did you come at this? Is this what's your current job title?
I got a few of them actually, funny okay. enough. Job search expert is, you know, not to toot my own horn, but that's the title I have.
Right.
Career expert or a job search expert. I also run marketing communications at our parent company. Okay. And that's why I get to do all the cool research, because I can work with our team to do all the data collection and kind of figure out what do we want to know about and kind of run that stuff and then leverage it to build content and talk to media and let them know, here's what's going on. Here's what people need to know and how it's going to affect their job search.
I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, but I really think that you could bring Josh and I in as eternally unemployed people.
Right. And
we could be your guinea pig.
The makeover stories.
Yeah. We could do a podcast about it.
No, live. You just bring us into presentations and you'd be like, here are two fucking losers who can't get a job. Right. No, it's Amanda.
That's going to nail it every time. No,
but technically you'd be paying me to do that. So actually it's a good idea, but then you'd bring us in. Right. Anyway. But so as a certified career coach, which you were a career, so how do you call it? Certified coach? Is that what it is?
Yeah, job coach? I mean, if you want to go the technical route, it's like, it's an initialism, right? It's CPC, certified professional career coach and certified professional resume writer. But I'm a resume writer and a career coach. I'm certified in those things.
So did you have some kind of research background? Like, I mean, how did you go from that into like leading the research area of things at Top Resume?
You know, it's so funny. So I went to school for marketing and global business. That's where I was going. And I left school. I graduated. I want to be a marketer. And then, you know, people laugh at you because it's like, well, marketing has a million disciplines, like figure something out. And I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I graduated in it was a good job market too. I can't even complain. And I still was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I randomly got called by somebody working at this company called The Ladders. And he's like, hey, I think I want you to come work for us. And being the fresh little green, no idea what I was doing, it was going to get me into the city. That's all I wanted. I wanted to move to New York, get out of my parents' house. had no idea what I was doing, no prep at all. And they're like, you're going to be doing some writing for us. I'm like, great, great. They hired me for customer service.
Oh, no. I get lots of those opportunities.
And I did,
Affleck really wants me to join. So,
I mean, you know, it's a job.
Well, it's like, what's funny about that is that I think a bunch of us, maybe multiple times for me at least, but like have been in that pitch, right? I got this thing for you. You got to come and do it. And some people, it truly is like a big jump up the ladder. And then most people, it's just some, you know, bait and switch, you know, I had that too, but good for you for like kind of pushing forward with that and kind of immersing yourself in this. But this is a market that's like hard, right? For people, as far as like the people you work with, it's not, I'm sure there's a lot of success stories, but there's a lot of people out there who are struggling too with this whole process, the whole job search process.
Yeah. It's so interesting because the story you hear employers saying is so different than what I'm hearing from job seekers. And I'm trying to figure out where the hell's the disconnect.
Right.
What's going on here? Because job seekers are still not especially confident in the job market. It's creeping up, but there's still a lot of that. I am seeing a lot more movement. You're hearing a lot of employers moaning over what we're calling like the great resignation. We're seeing a lot of people who kind of just hunker down for the last year or so and are like, all right, peace out, I'm out. You know, people are starting to hire again, I'm out of here. But then you're hearing those who may have been unemployed for a while and are like, well, crap, I got this huge employment gap on my resume. I don't know what to do. And some people are struggling. I also, and this is something I want to dig into deeper, but my hunch is that we're also seeing a lot of people struggling because they're trying to make some major career change and they're not just looking to get back into what they were doing before, either because their industry is still struggling or, you know, this time period has been like a big wake up call as I don't want to work for a company like that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. You know what? Life's short. I want to do something I really care about. And making a career change in any job market is challenging because you have to translate your experience into the terms and reposition it all. It's a marketing exercise for what your new employer or target employer is looking for. So I always tell everybody, the second you decide you're going to look for work, I don't care what you do for a living or what you want to do for a living, you become a marketer. You are a sales and marketing professional because now you have to think of that resume and LinkedIn profile and your elevator pitch and all that fun stuff. They're all marketing materials. It's your portfolio. It's how you're presenting yourself. And it all has to be positioned and you know, tailored with a certain goal in mind. If this is what I want to do and this is what they care about, how do I demonstrate that I have those skills in some way, shape, or form? If I'm coming from a different industry, maybe I got to tone down all the industry jargon so it's more generic so they see what I did and how it could relate to their work.
Got so it. You as a how do you get to be a resume writer, because I mean, it is a talent. It really is. Like, I'm in public relations and I can't write my own resume because
I would never write my own resume in a million freaking years because it's too personal. It's really hard to be objective. You're really proud about certain things that frankly just may not be relevant to what you're looking to do. And it's really hard to let go of some of those things. I was trained. So I started in customer service at a company called Ladders, which was a startup, and it was job board. And they ultimately had some resume writing. And I think I was there for something like, I don't know, 9, 10 years, something like that. And I had 5 different jobs and 13 different bosses over that time.
Wow.
And because it was a startup, I bounced. I actually liked that because I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do. And I got to bounce around to a bunch of different departments. One of them being in HR, in learning and development. I built the onboarding programs. And then I got kind of poached from the head of sales because he wanted me to come on board and build his sales training programs because he was building out a new team. And so I kind of got known as the person who we have an idea. Here's some duct tape and staples. You figure out how to make it work. And if you can prove that there's like something there, then we'll give you money. And that's what I ended up doing in a lot of different departments. It wasn't a really well-defined role. My titles were all over the freaking place and they wouldn't make sense to a lot of people. But at the end of the day, I kind of tried to think about, well, what did I really do? And at the end of it, it was somebody had an idea and they needed a proof of concept. And they said, we kind of want to do this. go research the bejesus out of it and come back and figure out something to do and test it. And if we like where you're going with it, we'll give you some money and some other people to help you do it. And ultimately, one of those things that I did at that company was a career coaching program. And so that's where I was working with somebody else who was much higher up than me, who was, had a research background. Her name's Archana. And I partnered with her, and together we kind of built this program out. And then as part of it, I was training these individuals to become the coaches. And it's great. You can do great internal training. And frankly, I was very proud of what we did, but you need the credentials if you want anyone to really try.
Right. Well,
now you have to get externally certified. We'll pay for your certs, but you have to pass all the exams after we've trained you. And so as part of it, they're like, well, Amanda, like you should probably get the certs too. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea since I'm teaching. Right.
Well, you know, there,
as a resume writer,
do you have any, just curiously, do you have any math background? Because I just remember how much like research and stats and all that was just so, it was so much of a math oriented mindset as opposed, you know, even though you are technically just like, you know, researching trends and stuff like that.
I don't have a formal background, but I always like to geek out on Excel. It was really, you know, when I remember being at the company, when I first started the letters, one of the co-founders, this guy named Andrew Koch, kind of took me under his wing. And he's like, I'm going to teach you how to really, because I mean, when I graduate college, those things were barely like something you took anyone right. told me about. We didn't use them. And so he's like, no, you're going to learn functions. And he would set up things for me to learn. And so I got really into just being able to manipulate data and come up. Now, can I do confidence, blah, blah, blah? No, I hire a consultant to run that. Like I'm doing another research project right now. And I got a guy who's a data scientist because I was like, Joe, I need someone to seriously like make sure this can stand up because this is well beyond my head. And everyone I've talked to at the company, no one can help me. So someone's got to come back and validate this for me.
I have a question. So since your job is to help people find their dream jobs, are you in your dream job? Is this?
That's a great question. I'm going to say something that's controversial, I guess. I think dream jobs are bullshit. I just don't think it's a real term. You know, I think it's a marketing term. And do we use it? Of course, because people have this concept. I think every job has good and bad. I enjoy what I do. I really do. I get excited about it. I like the fact that at the end of the day, what I do helps people in some way. And also, I just find it very interesting because it's not something everyone understands. And frankly, especially resume writing, there are so many unwritten, unspoken rules that somebody in recruitment or HR understands, or someone who's a certified job search geek like me gets, but the average person should never understand this stuff. And so I like being able to kind of get deeper into that and share that. So I do get really excited and interested in that stuff. And I do get to help with the HR stuff at our company too, which makes me happy.
But so when you were little, did you have a dream job?
I thought about this a lot, actually. For a long time, I wanted to be a teacher like my aunt. And in some ways, I guess I kind of ended up doing that. And I didn't realize that I ended up doing that. In first grade, I wanted to design wallpaper. So in fabric, you know, because why not? I wanted to be an artist for a really long time. Actually, I almost went to art school. I wanted to go to SCAD. That was my dream for a long time. And my parents crushed that one pretty hardcore in high school. and so I ended up going more the business route. But it's worked out, to be quite honest.
So...
No, like professional parachuter or actress.
No, you know, I wanted to be an artist for a long time. I wanted to restore artwork. But then I found out that's a lot of chemistry, and I was like,
I hated chemistry.
I was like, oh, that's not my bag of chips. So, I was a dual major in college. I was an art history dual major because I really love that stuff. So for a long time, I wanted to be Philippe Montebello and do something at the Met. And then I decided, you know, or I could just really try to be hard at, you know, at good at, and successful in business. And maybe someday they'll ask to name a wing after me. So that became the new dream. We didn't quite get there, but.
I was going to ask you if you wanted to be Sigourney Weaver from Ghostbusters. That's the extent of my knowledge. So I know you came to us because you did just come out with some articles about women and how they struggle during COVID with job loss and over taking care of their kids and families. And I mean, and also I think one of the points in one of the articles was about optimism for job search pre-COVID versus now. So do you want to talk a little bit about those different things?
Sure. So there's been a lot of research done out there about women are leaving the workforce in droves, and we knew that. So we didn't necessarily want to zero in on that. At Top Resume, we wanted to figure out, well, what's coming next? Okay, they left. When are they coming back? Are they going to come back? When they do come back, if they come back, are their needs or requirements going to change, their priorities? And that's what we were most interested in figuring out, you know, not just, oh, hey, you left or you reduced your hours, but what are your plans after this is all over? And it was crazy. We found that, you know, when we asked, hey, are you planning to return to the workforce anytime soon? And 69% said, nah. Not really planning to come back anytime soon. And the 31% who said, yeah, I'm coming back, it was within a year. It's not as soon as possible, I'm already searching for a job. It was more like, by the next year, I plan to return. And I thought that was really startling. And what's interesting is I did similar data in the UK, and it was actually an opposite story. They were all like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to go back. I want to come back now. And in the US, we're like, we're going to hang for a bit and kind of reprioritize things. And
is that because in the UK, there's better childcare options and healthcare? I mean, is it because of those things and the vacation's better and people in the US feel less appreciated?
I do. I think it's a factor. I think they're just that. I mean, the maternity leave they get, the parental leave they get in general, the healthcare. Yeah, I think that's definitely a big factor in it. At first I thought, oh, well, you know what? They're a little bit behind us. The data was all collected at the same time. They were still just opening up. Maybe that's it. But the more I thought about it, the more it was, well, when I was trying to really think about what benefits do employers need to offer to kind of lure women back in the US, it's different in the UK because they have a lot of those things already. It's kind of adding more to it as opposed to giving them the basics that we don't necessarily get in the US. And so, yeah, I do think that plays a factor. But, you know, we also, I don't know, we talked something like 46,000 job seekers, both male and female, and said, hey, how do you feel about your job search given the current climate? And we gave them four options. I'm optimistic. I'm confident. I'm frustrated. I'm very negative. There was another one that was, I'm not searching, and we eliminated those, right? They're not active job seekers. But when we did those and we bucketed them into a positive outlook and a negative outlook, and neither group, neither gender had kind of reached pre-COVID levels of optimism, but it was clear women went much deeper into the negative side, much deeper into the darker side, and they stayed that way for much longer. And it's so interesting to see the two worst kind of negative hits were September, when we realized our kids weren't going back to full-time school. It was like, oh no, this really isn't ending anytime soon. And then wouldn't you know, December, when all the holiday stuff is coming and the winter breaks, and suddenly we're wearing a few extra hats than usual. Those were kind of the lowest points for women. They weren't the lowest points for men. Theirs was in November, and I still couldn't figure out what, I was like, is that the election? It just, I don't know. I couldn't find a pinpoint there, but it they did not line up. And
they were losing their minds because the kids were home and wives were losing their minds. And it was November. It was too
late. We were just making the, at this point.
Was there any age in there besides the gender?
Oh, you know what? I do have the age range, but it broke down into such smaller groups that I didn't feel like it was worth reporting because it just wasn't big enough populations in any given one of them. It was pretty widespread. Most people had more than one child. Everyone had to have children under the age of 18. The bulk of them fell into, you know, two children was kind of the average, I want to say. And you were looking at those, I think it was like 30 to mid 40s was kind of the rate, was the sweet spot for people who responded.
So did you think that that a lot of these numbers, like 69% of working women said they plan to remain at home as a full-time caregiver for the time being. Is that, did you assess that you think it came more out of like a fear situation or an empowerment situation? So like, that's it. I'm fucking taking my life in my own hands. I'm going to work from home. And if they're not going to pay me, too fucking bad. Or is it more like, I got to be home and take care of the kids. Who's going to take care of them otherwise, you know?
It's probably, you know, my gut says it's a bit of a mixed bag because it's so different where, depending on where you are in the country. Some people, you know, I'm in New York, and my kid's special needs. So we did go back in September. It was every other day for a while, but by the time we hit November, they were back full time. We pulled our kid January, February, because, you know, the numbers were spiking. And so he did virtual for 2 months, but for the most part, they were open. My friends in Jersey, their kids were virtual the entire year. I don't know if that was by choice or their school district. And even in Westchester, I had some friends that same thing. So I think there's definitely some of that because depending on where you are or what, you know, kind of the mood there, it's different. And people were scattered everywhere. And again, there wasn't a really good sense of where's, you know, did it make sense to show where people are, but they were kind of scattered across the country. So I think part of it's that. And I think the other part of it is just freaking work mom burnout. I mean, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm feeling it. And I had the luxury of working from home the whole time. Nobody tried to force me into an office. I 100% poached a girl from my son's old daycare and said, hey, I will pay you. Come to my house every day. Please walk my kid and do not go out with your friends. Thanks. You know? Okay. But
are you getting a sense that employers are receptive to this change or this research that you're finding? So, okay. So you say, okay, there's one here. It's like 55% of those still working said they would voluntarily leave their jobs. Like that's like an empowering thing to me, even though it might seem like coming from a place of like, well, you know, childcare or senior care or something. But do you feel like employers are receptive to these numbers or are they going to push back and be like, well, too fucking bad. Get back in the office if you want to keep your job.
I think they have to be receptive because as hard as, and as we're seeing the numbers of people being frustrated by not being able to find work, all I'm hearing from employers is, holy crap, I have a million open positions and I can't get anybody in the door. No one's answering my phone calls. I can't get somebody to interview. You know, we put in this offer, the person turned around and used it to negotiate a bigger, you know, package with their current employer.
The negotiation then in that case has to not just be money then, right? I mean, like these people have to be like, I got to work home 3 days a week. What do you say?
I would love to steal this, but I'll give him credit. Okay. Actually, it's my former employer, Mark Senadella. He had a quote where he says, you know, remote work is the new signing bonus. And so, you know, give credit where credit's due. I was like, oh yeah, that's a really good. That's I like that. And
as long as they're receptive to it, it's not a bad idea.
Well, yeah.
I also tend to think too, that after living through a year of COVID, people cut a lot of costs and started to recognize
they got rid of office.
They didn't need as much as they thought they did, and they could live on less. And that's why when these women are like, I'm not going back to work, it's probably because they looked at their bottom line and they were like, you can stay home.
We can make this. I think it's on both ends, right? I think the women are reevaluating and saying, you know, and this is, we grew up in this time where it was, you can do anything. And it somehow got translated into you should do everything. And there's so much pressure to get a gold star as a mom and a gold star at work. And God forbid you let them know that you can't make this meeting because your kid's got a dentist appointment or something like that. And I think that's one of the nice things about all this is that, well, you know what? Those lines had to blur. Sorry. It's reality. You know, we're all working remotely. So I think part of it is that some women just said, you know what? I don't need this. I don't want to do this. And I don't have to do this. I think employers, you are going to see more of them opening up to offering some benefits or some sort of flexibility, maybe not entirely remote and certainly not for all positions, but you're going to see more flexibility and offering flexibility because even those companies that didn't think it was possible, well, we just spent a year experimenting and guess what? It is possible.
Well, if you need something to happen, it can be possible. And I think one thing that's going to be helpful is that husbands were locked in the house with the kids too. And so for all the leaders in these companies now, men and women, they all got to see what goes on for families. And yeah. they live it like, you know, some people can separate themselves if their spouse is a stay at home child. Now everybody saw front row what right. people go through. So like when they go back to the office, they need to respect all the, you know, all the parents.
I want to second that. I think, Brianna, that's a great point. I think people got a wake up call from the inside and said, oh, shit. This is what it really is like at home. But here's what I think is the cancer to that is that age range of older CEOs and older bosses who only know how to work in everybody in the office, everybody in my grease boards and pointing it out. And they couldn't adjust and they won't be able to adapt. And they're going to make people come back that realize this is not the most effective way. That I feel like could potentially be a huge problem for this like kind of new realization that we've all had.
And there's a couple things, you know, one thing I found is that if you're kind of established in your career and you're like, I already made all my work friends, I'm cool. I don't need the FaceTime and the happy hours and that sort of thing. Very happy. I don't need to commute 3 hours a day. I'm cool. Thanks.
Right.
You want me in a couple times a month? Great. But I don't need to be there. I don't want to be there. But I'm talking to a lot of younger workers who want the mentorship. They want to see, they want the socialization. I mean, I remember all my best friends were the people I worked with. We all worked really hard. We were all young. We all went out and partied after work. You know, that was the culture. And a lot, I mean, my, you know, one of my in-laws, they have a daughter who just turned 22. She just quit her job because her company said that they, you know, aren't going back to their office. And she went and moved to a company that is going back to an office because she wants to be around people. So I think that's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is depending on who decides or negotiates to stay from home, if it is a greater portion of the women who decide to do it, there is that concern about proximity bias. And that's the concept that your managers think that the people they see in the office are the ones that are more productive. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of this, you know, untruthful discrimination against those who are remote workers. If your boss is also working remote, you're great. But if they're not, then you fear all I can think of is that Friends episode when Rachel had some job and her boss and the other coworker were smokers and they kept going out for cigarette breaks and they come back with like solving a new problem, starting a new project. And this girl would get all the job. So, you know, Rachel decides she was going to pretend to be a smoker in on the conversations. That's all I can think of when I think of proximity bias is that, you know, there's this concern that you're going to get passed over for projects because they're just not seeing you. And so you're not top of mind. And there's this assumption that, well, yeah, you're just hanging out at home, which is ridiculous.
That, when I first became a mom, I'll never forget, we all went out drinking and someone said to me, oh yeah, so-and-so was talking about how you leave every day at 6 o'clock while, you know, people stay. And I'm like, I have a family.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't need to, I'm not staying just to like, so people feel better that I'm there.
Right.
And I have lived my entire career. My life comes first. I mean, perhaps that's why my career has been my life. And you know what? On my deathbed, I will not be a person who said, I wish I hadn't worked so much.
Well, that kind of also goes back to like, I think what you were saying, Amanda, about like dream jobs are that concept being bullshit, even though our subtitle to this show is the podcast for
dreamers. I love you guys.
I know. No, but it's a good point because it makes it then be about the career. It's my dream career. What I want to do, whatever I do is my dream, right? As opposed to this place I've landed. So it's like, I've said this before on the podcast, Brianna, but like the way that like professional athletes used to be owned by one team. That was it. You pretty much were on that team your whole career. And now it's like you sign a contract and after 4 years, you reevaluate. Maybe you're in San Francisco and maybe you're in New England. And that's just the way that the mentality is the career is the football player, not the dream job is the New York Giants, right? So it kind of plays into that of like, if we can change our mentality maybe to being like, listen, I'm a free agent. You don't want me here. You're not going to give me work from home, or you don't want me here. You're not going to have me in the office for the younger people. Then fuck it. I go to another company. See you later.
Well, and I think it's a power shift, right? Like, I feel like people feel like they have more power than they ever had before to you know, make these demands, or, you know, the only thing that in this country, and again, why the UK was probably different, is healthcare is, you know, people are beholden. They need healthcare.
Yeah.
And that is that's how, you know, businesses, corporations have a hold over the average worker.
We asked those who said, well, eventually I want to go back, or I'm still working, but I think I want to look for another job sort of thing. Like, what do you care most about? And it's interesting because I have the stats for this group of working mothers and what they want versus the overall population, because it's a question we tend to ask all job seekers that kind of come through the door. What matters most when choosing your next job? Historically, and it has stood the test of time for years, it is either company culture or salary and bonus compensation. They are always competing for one and two spots. Company Wow. culture typically has beat out compensation for the past, I don't know, 18 months, something like that, for this group of working women. That actually, company culture fell to number 5, which it's never that low.
Really?
They care about flexibility. Wow. They care about comp. And then they care about healthcare benefits in that order. And I thought that was really interesting. And it, honestly, there wasn't even a strong winner. Compensation and flexibility tied for number one. And they were only about each 18% of the votes. Whereas normally you see number one taking a good 20 to 30% of the responses. And so it's spread out, but flexibility, which is normally down at least number 5 on the list, was absolutely number 1.
On the how toxic the workplace is. I mean, have they just given up hope? Because company culture, like, that has always been a big one for me. Yeah. And all I can see, I guess, is that people are like, you know what? Fuck it. I quit. You know, I'm never going to win on the culture, because it's pretty toxic in a lot of places. Yeah. So I'm going to go for the flexibility and make the money.
But shouldn't at some point the corporate mindset transfer to productivity? So like when you sit there and say, to use the Rachel example, you know, or like, you know, somebody doesn't see you, so you're probably not working as hard. Like, shouldn't it just ultimately be like the results and what you get done in your job? Like, I used to have a kid who used to work for me when I was a camp director, right? And he was like kind of an asshole, and like he was not the most trustworthy person. And like, normally if you saw him, you'd be like, I wouldn't hire this kid. But he did everything. He did what he was needed to do. He was productive and he was reliable when he was on the job. I could never fault them for that. Right. So like that mentality of I'm home and I come in a couple times a month, but like I get the job done. And like that being the only like metric, like, shouldn't that be the thing that ultimately companies are like, you know, prioritizing?
I mean,
their employees.
And I do think we're seeing companies. Well, even it's interesting, even the company I work for, right? Top Resume has a parent company. Our parent company has an office in Union Square. That's our home base. And then we've got another one out on the West Coast that's more of like a WeWork space that they kind of come in and out of. But we always had a group that were always remote. And our writers, we have writers all around the world, right? But the corporate employees, I mean, in the last year, we've had so many transitions with the executive team and that sort of thing. Half my executive team doesn't even work or live near the New York City area anymore. Our head of HR is in Pittsburgh, head of finance is in Colorado. So it became pretty clear pretty quickly that mm-hmm. we were never all going to go back to an office, even though there are pockets of people that very much mm-hmm. want to do that. And what I think is that not only is it good because of productivity, but Josh, if you suddenly can hire anyone anywhere, you can cast a much wider net to find the right individual for the role, and job seekers as well. Keep that in mind, even if it has a location, be like, read it. Tap your network and say, do you know anyone who works for that company? What are you finding out about them online? Google the company, set up a Google News alert. Is there anything popping up about what they're talking about in terms of how they might be changing their work environment? Because I'm still seeing job descriptions that have the city or the location of their headquarters. But if you actually read the description, they're open to anybody who's in that same time zone, or, you know, there's more of that.
What the salaries, though, are they going to reflect wherever you're located? You know what I'm saying? How are they doing?
Yeah, it's a tricky. So it's interesting because I think a law came into effect I think it was this past January it came into effect in Colorado. If you were a recruiting in Colorado, you actually have to list like compensation and benefits now. I mean, don't quote me on the exact specifics of that, but Colorado alone has these right. laws.
I know somebody else. I didn't mean to interrupt. I know somebody else right now who just had that happen. They moved, they had a job in New York and moved back home to the actual home city of that company. And that company made them take a $10,000 pay cut just to be able to, even though it's the same position.
That's ridiculous. It's just, hey, if you don't have to pay for a spot in a corporate office for me, give me the freaking money. I mean, that's kind of why it's pay for the value that I'm giving you, not where I live. I mean, in so many different parts of the country, you can't even ask what your previous salary was or what your current salary is. It's illegal in a lot of some of its specific cities, some of its overall states. It's really weird where it is, but you're finding that more and more that they can't offer that because really that shouldn't matter. It should be, well, what am I giving you? And especially if you don't have to offer me, I don't know, commuter benefits anymore. Some of the benefits that were, you know, really appealing are moot at this point, depending on who you're hiring.
Well, and I'm wondering though, what all of these offices in New York, I mean, if people are going to be keeping those and paying rent and paying all the expenses that go, I mean, how long are they going to be like, okay, you don't have to come in. Eventually they either have to give up their offices and go everybody remote, which is not possible for a lot of these big, like I know an agency where they said in September, you just have to come back to the office like 8 times a month, which is reasonable. It's 2 times a week, you know, but I have a friend in the fashion industry. She's already back 5 days a week.
Yeah. One of my relatives was really, because there is an office for his company in Texas where his, you know, where his wife is from and that sort of thing, and was really trying to vie to relocate there and was turned down because there were other members of the specific team that were also from that area. And if they did it for one, they'd have to do it for all. And they don't want to lose the people that are in the New York area. So they're like, nope, sorry, dude, not happening. And I was like, oh God. But yeah, I'm hearing a lot of it's, some are starting as early as now, some are July, right now. And some are September. And a lot of them I'm hearing it's, you know, you have to come in 3 days a week. You have to, you know, they're still rotating it out, but they're trying to figure out kind of what's that happy medium for what's kind of maximum productivity / I think employee happiness, but
I don't want to like make this political or anything, but like, look, we're having in some aspects of society, we're having some progress, you know, like, you know, LGBTQ rights and other issues. This is a work politics issue. We got to get to the point where we're like not requiring people to be in a room for 40 hours a week just to pretend to be productive. I'm sorry. Like young people, whoever grow up and we're all running these companies going, hey, just do your job and then go do what you have to do. I think the world becomes a better place if we can get to that point. We've got to play the game and we need your insight. But before we do that, I want you to give me just off the top of your head, quick fire, top three things if you're looking for a job right now, just from basic to complicated. What do you do? From resume, you're a resume expert. Are you things like, you know, I'm thinking like, are you adjusting your resume to each job or do you just stick to the one resume? You know, like what are your top three tips on what we should do?
All right. Most effective job search is going to have a clear goal. You want to try and at least narrow it down, put some bumpers on there, because that goal is going to be the foundation of your whole job search strategy. It's how you're going to position that initial, what I call your foundational resume.
Okay.
How you're going to prioritize your networking contacts, your networking activities, who you talk to, what you apply for, who you follow up, where you spend your time and dedicate for the job search. So
got it. That's one.
Do the research, get a sense of not only what you want to do, but what's truly available and try and merge those two together.
Got it.
Should be customizing your resume for each application. But that said, it should never be an overhaul of your freaking resume, because if you're in a lane it's tweaking keywords because, you know, majority of companies use some sort of software to scan and parse your resume. You want to make sure that whatever keywords you're seeing in those job descriptions, if you have that skill, you have that experience, you want to use the language you're seeing in those job descriptions and incorporate it into your resume where it makes sense. Do not throw them at the bottom of your resume in white font. They know that they get pissed off and they call you out on it. So it's really about, you know, if they keep saying that they're looking for somebody with JavaScript skills, you want to make sure you've mentioned that a couple times. The goal is, you know, 2 to 3 times if it seems to be important for the job. When you're creating...
Do Java and script have to be next to each other? Because if you're really good at making like Java... And then you have great handwriting.
Great script.
Script.
So, Josh, I'm going to guess you're not a developer. you know what? But you know what? As funny as it is, really important to keep in mind that say you're looking for a job in human resources, you want to put HR and you want to put human resources. Put the variations in there because it just kind of like, you know, covers your bases. Cool. That's one of the things to keep in mind. We did a white paper a while back on, you know, what do employers care about when they're looking at a resume? Strong career narrative, especially if you're making twists and turns along your history. How do you show them why you're applying for this job? Like, what? Why did all these things?
But does that come through in your resume or your cover letter? Because honestly, I hate cover letters. But does that come through in your cover letter?
We did a study this past fall. Cover letters are more likely to be read since the pandemic hit. Employers said they're more likely to read them now than before the pandemic.
Really?
They care less about employment gaps, significant employment gaps. They've said, we get it. Everyone's in the same boat. It's not something we're focused on. Don't obsess over it. Focus on telling us what you do well. And the other thing is interview follow-up, the thank you note afterwards. It's taken on greater significance, especially when you think that all the interviews have been going on for the most part virtually. Right. They're looking for points of connection. They're looking for extra insight into your personality in that cover letter. They're looking for the follow-up to build the
report. Do they, when you say personality, do they want you to kind of like communicate your personality that way? You know, like write a funny line here or there, or do they just want you to be like, you know...
I go by the rule that my friends and I made up when we were all dating. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd always say on a first date, be yourself, but be 90% of yourself. Show your personality, but tone it down a little because you don't know who you're dealing with yet.
Right.
Don't dance on the bar.
Right. I mean, maybe do a little shake next to your chair, but maybe don't get up on the bar on the first go. So give them a little because they're trying to figure out, would you fit in with the team? Is this personality make sense? And so you do want to give a little of that. And frankly, cover letters are boring. So give them a line that talks, maybe an anecdote that explains a situation you dealt with, the demonstrate you have the skills they're looking for.
Right.
You know, especially if you're a confident writer, do it because who wants to read the boring cover letters? Let's be honest.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
It's like, boring, they're definitely going to find it boring.
Like you don't know where boring, like boring or interesting. And then I read them sometimes. I go, now I just sound like a weirdo.
I started seeing during COVID more people not asking for cover letters. I was like, I'll apply for this.
I was convinced that people were going to say, oh no, because we have so many more applications. We don't want cover letters. But they said, they're like, no, actually, we're more likely to read them now. Now, granted, the before was a 50-50. 50% said I never read them. 50% said I think they're important. So it's an uptick from that. But I'd always say, as long as they don't say no cover letter, I would include one because it's an other opportunity to add an information that doesn't make sense in your resume, but could help you.
Okay. What about lying? Because as of yesterday, I went to Princeton University, but before that, it was just the University of Buffalo. So how does that work?
We actually did a survey on deal breakers and for resume deal breakers and interview deal breakers. Actually, we've done both and lying's a big no.
Yeah, Josh,
so they researched
your book, Josh, the person will have gone to Princeton. They'll be like,
yeah, that's my fear.
How's
Professor so-and-so? Oh, he died.
Well,
we had put a whole article of stories of recruiters telling us about how they like you know, they're like, and they're bad. Oh my gosh, they're bad. Somebody sent their
really
twin
research it?
To an interview.
No.
Like there's been some crazy.
They figure it out. Like people actually figure it out. If you, I'm saying this for our audience too.
I'm sure not. Does everybody? No, I'm sure there are plenty of people who fly under the radar, but I am definitely more on the side of, I would be the one who would get in trouble. Guaranteed. Right. I would be the one who'd get caught with the joint when they were legal. You know,
what about the difference between the lying and the like, yeah, I can do this. And then they go, I really can't do this. But then I get there and I'm the kind of person that figures it out, because I know somebody who like literally lies on her resume and has a killer job now because of it. And also is somebody who was like, yeah, no, I do all that stuff, and clearly never did any of that stuff. So while I clearly have animosity toward this person, also it's got to happen. She can't be the only one doing that. Like, what is the word on the street on that?
You know, my thing is if the jobs you're looking for are all looking for some sort of experience or skill that you don't have, you start making steps to try and fill it. And so you can put that you have a familiarity with it, or you can somehow work it in. But by the time you get to an interview, you better feel confident about, this is how much I've done, but this is what I've done on my own to show you that I can do this. And what's interesting is that this was, I don't know, a couple of years ago, we asked, you know, what are the skills that you find most, or what's most important when hiring a candidate? Potential. Now, how do you show potential in a resume? That's challenging. But I think that that's the point. If you see something, I have a friend who's a tax attorney. This girl has literally got an interview on every job she's ever applied for. And I'm like, Rita, give me, or like, what are you doing, girlfriend? And, you know, and I've coached her through some interviews, because she's like, I'm going for this job and I don't actually have this type of experience. I was like, well, research it and figure out, how is it similar to what you're doing? And what have you learned is different about it? And be ready to talk about that. And that's enough, because it shows she took the initiative and she's a quick study. We also have found that adaptability, flexibility, problem solving, those are all skills that are considered even more desirable now than before the pandemic, because people have had to switch gears and change priorities and adapt to weird situations and still meet goals. And so they're still looking for people to do that. So anytime you can incorporate examples of where you've leveraged those skills to create results or contribute or solve a problem, that's going to set you apart. Some of that can go into your resume in places where it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's completely like not even a pro bono thing you could throw on your resume. Then you'd want to work that into your cover letter. But the other thing I'm going to throw out there is that multiple studies have found you are 10 times more likely to land the job, not even just get an interview, but land the job, if your application is accompanied by a referral. So the best thing you can do is find advocates within your circle of friends and family and fellow colleagues, because those are the people that are going to get you past some of those things where it's not on the resume, but dude, this guy can learn anything and I'd vouch for him. And that holds a lot of freaking weight, because employee referrals tend to stay longer, be a better cultural fit, and produce higher results. It's just
and the opposite of that. Well, that makes total sense. The opposite of that is don't burn bridges, because
100%. I don't
care. When the word gets out about you, you are fucked if people are talking shit about you.
No, you keep friends, because it's important. It really is. And there are so many people, and I think we saw that especially during the pandemic, there were a lot of people looking for a job who have not had to formally look for a job and conduct a job search in many, many years. And oftentimes it was because an opportunity just fell from one to another, and they never had to have a resume, a job search process, and that sort of thing. And they're the ones that's like, well, yeah, leverage that network. I don't care if everyone you think you know has retired. Who did you manage? Who were your vendors? Who did you mentor? There are always people. Look at your family, especially I'd say now, because people are so stressed out. There's so much going on. Think about the people who know you well, because they're more willing to give you time and do you a favor now than someone that you don't really know well, so that you're not chasing up. I'd start with your inner circle. Even if you think they have nothing in common with your goals, search for the people who are the social butterflies, or what Malcolm, you know, what's called the power connectors, because guaranteed they know someone who will be able to help you, and they're more willing to go the distance to hook you up.
All right. Well, I think we need to move on to the game. Sorry.
No, it's totally fine. We're just going to bombard you. We're going to bombard your email with more questions and therapy support. Thank you. Okay. Brianna, you want to do the game? You want to do the top game?
You can go ahead. It's your game.
You want to start? No. All right. Okay. You know what? We'll keep it simple because it's quick fire answers. All right. This game is called Designing Women's Careers. Okay. So they're going to be pop culture questions around that. Maybe, I don't know. Pay attention. Here we go. Quick answers. Who was the female lead in the 1990 hit film Working Girl?
Oh, Melanie Griffith.
Good. Who was the male lead?
Oh, Harrison Ford.
Good. Who is one of the supporting actresses who's also amazing? And we mentioned her before.
It's not even Leda. Oh, Sigourney Weaver. She's
there, you
the
go.
Boss.
There you go. There you go.
I was thinking of Joan Cusack.
Joan Cusack, best line ever. Coffee, tea, me.
And I was also thinking of Alec Baldwin, but keep going.
Oh, he's in it too. Right. Okay. Designing Women aired on what network?
Oh, geez.
There's only three.
I'm going to say CBS, but I'm making that up.
You rock. Good. All right. A resume, or the word resume in French, means what? Oh, got her. Stumped.
In French.
En français.
I mean, it sounds like to stop, but I only know it. I know the Latin. That's it.
summary. It means summary.
I should know that. Somewhere there's a certification god coming down to yell at me.
Okay. A resume is also called the CV sometimes. What does CV stand for?
Curriculum vitae.
Very nice.
I
didn't know that either. All right, here it is. Who, this is a crazy one. I found this on Wikipedia. Who is credited loosely with writing the first resume?
Leonardo da Vinci, man.
Oh, she knows. Yeah. That was a boom.
That's I don't crazy. Know what that too, to be exact.
I feel like that makes you a real nerd. Sorry.
It's part of my onboarding for new employees. I tell them he's the godfather, which is probably BS because we just have records of his documents and not
right and nobody else's. That's funny. Wow, that was a good one. That's great. Okay, last one. In Friends, when Monica had to fire one of her employees from her kitchen to make a statement that she's not to be messed with, which one of the other friends helped her out?
Joey.
There it is. Good one. Good one. All right, that was our game. Wait, I have one silly one here. Okay, just one quick silly one. Legally, can you refuse to go to HR when you know you're about to get laid off or fired? I mean, like, what if they tell you to go down there for like a week and you just never go down there? Like, is that illegal? This is a true story, Amanda. This happened. I tried to avoid it for what's the legality of that?
So I'm not an employment lawyer, so I'm going to put that up front and say I have no freaking clue, but I do recall hearing a story in Japan where instead of firing the person, they just took away all of their furniture and desks, so the person just had to stand in their office without anything as punishment.
Like George Costanza. Didn't George Costanza get put in the closet and all those things? They were like, didn't we fire you?
So many bad things happen.
Oh, wait, last one. How many pages should a resume be? Is it okay if it goes over a page?
It should be two, actually. Employers prefer two pages, even if you're entry level. If you have enough material that warrants it, do not do the double spacing courier nude. It stretches
22 font.
Yeah.
My resume would information if I left everything on it.
Most recent 15 years, 10 to 15 years is the rule of thumb. You can have an earlier career note to like name drop anything really important that you want on there, but only focus on the most recent 10 to 15 years and keep it to two pages. There are a few exceptions depending on what you do.
Wait, I saw one guy's resume one time. It said books I've read and it listed books you read. Is that stupid or is that advisable?
And that's not advisable.
Books I read. I was like, Fifty Shades of Grey, Playboy, 1987 through 1994.
Amanda, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Do you have any social media channels?
Oh, yeah. thanks. That's a really good point. Yeah, you can find me basically on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all. If you look for Job Search Amanda, you'll find me. And then also if you go to topresume.com/jobsearchamanda, you can also find special offers if you want discounted pricing. We also offer free resume reviews. So keep that in mind. You can always have your resume screened and just get a sense of where it stands.
I've never seen anyone do the hand signal for the slash, but thank you very much. Because I now know what you mean.
You know, perhaps my dream job was to be, you know, one of those guys at the airport.
Well, I follow you here on the page and you're great. And I will send you all my resumes by tonight. Thanks for that offer, man. You're so nice. but we really appreciate you coming on and sharing some insight and knowledge. So everybody check out her Instagram page and the website and some of the research is actually really fascinating. Brianna, what's your podcast? Brianna, what's your socials?
At BriHaswan on Instagram.
Awesome. And I'm at Mr. Josh Hyman. And we are at, of course, at Jobs Blow Podcast, jobsblowpodcast.com. Give us a review, a share, a like, tell your friends, throw eggs at us when you see us, whatever it takes. We love you. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.